This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Hello, and welcome to the morning break, live on Monday, 20th May. I'm your host, Kanja Kutik. And today we're looking at teachers who've crossed borders. My guest is from Romania and is now teaching Germany. How did she do it?
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello again, and welcome to the show. I hope you're all doing well today. It's gray and a little cold here in Germany. It's a public holiday today, so most of us are at home and not at work. I hope you're doing well today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you're joining us live, do drop us a message in the chat to say hello and perhaps tell us where you're listening in from. So, you know, teaching is one of those qualifications, one of those professions, in my opinion anyway, that opens doors to the world. As an EFL teacher, I have many friends and colleagues who work in various different parts of the world, teaching English language at universities, language schools, and also to corporate clients. And opportunities for teaching exist also in international school settings all over the world. I know Germans who've taught German as a foreign language in German curriculum schools abroad, in Singapore and China. There are subject teachers who teach, say, geography, maths, and in international schools. Are you familiar with the slogan, "Have passport, will travel"? I might put a new one out there. Have qualified teacher status, will travel. But really though, is it as easy as that? Well, with me today, I have Dana Metze, who is a qualified teacher from Romania, who's currently living and actually teaching in a secondary school in Germany. And we just need Dana, if you can hear me, to please click on the call-in button so that I can let you into the show. There you go. I can see you. And come and join us, Dana. Hi, Dana.
Hi.
Say hi.
Hello. Hello. Hi.
Hi. I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. Sorry, some technical issues really at the beginning of your show today. But anyways, thank you so much for the invitation and for having me on the show today. You mentioned open doors. I was thinking instantly about so many roads that open really when you can teach a language, especially.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? There's some qualifications where you think, wow, this is really going to take me, you know, places. But first of all, aside from the technical issues, Dana, how are you today? It's a day off here in Germany.
Yes, I'm actually enjoying this day off, and it's great to have the chance to rewind a little bit and reflect. But really, it's a working weekend. I spent my day yesterday working. I'm going to spend the day today working again and basically, hopefully, catching up on a lot of things that I have on the list.
I think teachers just never stop working, whether you're in the classroom or outside of the classroom. Well, we are truly honored. We're really, really happy. Well, I'm really happy to have you here, Dana. So currently, as I was saying to our listeners, currently you're a secondary school teacher here in Germany. But let's begin at the beginning. I have two questions for you. Why did you become a teacher? Why did you want to go into teaching? And how did you get qualified at the very beginning?
All right. So this will take us like 20 years back. And that's approximately when I started teaching. I think teaching was always somehow part of me. The very first memory that I have with me teaching would be when I was like 9 or 10 years old and I was lining up all my dolls and putting notebooks in front of them and giving them pencils to write on. Luckily, at the time, we didn't have devices and technology and electronics, so it was a really creative way of building a classroom according to my style of teaching. It's funny when I look back, but I guess it was always something I had in me to teach and to be surrounded by others, and not necessarily leading others all the time, but being there as support and motivator, sort of. Anyways, I went to university in Romania. That's where I trained as a teacher. We had the 4-year training as, of course, up to undergraduate studies. And then everything fell into place, really. The masters and all the things that we did as teachers in Romania, the public, as a teacher in a public school in Romania, one would have to sit series of exams. And it starts with something that here in Germany they call referendariat. In Romania, we have the definitive stage where you're actually confirmed as a teacher, and you can teach in the system until then, but it's only after this confirmation that you can actually stay as a teacher, and you need to have this as an obligation. So that was in 2005, I think. And ever since I stepped in a classroom, I knew that was the place I wanted to be in, and that's the role I wanted to have in life. So it was really in the books, in the cards, I guess.
In the stars. Your future is written in the stars. So that's really interesting what you said. So you'd always wanted to do it. You had, you know, also from how you described your little games or how you played, right? So you had that vision, you know, there's that notebook and pencil thing, there's that lining up. And then you did the BA and then the MA, and then you had that that practical experience in a school, which then, having completed that, gave you then the qualified teacher status for Romania.
Yes.
Right. Was there any point in your training where you had doubts about having made the right choice?
I guess we all have doubts, to be honest. We have good days and we have bad days. And the source of my doubts maybe was that as a student learning to become a teacher in Romania, you don't really have the guidance that we needed back then. And I actually gained practical knowledge of teaching when I went to the class in every single day of my first year. Was a new experience for me, and it was really hard to find all the tools that you need when you're a young teacher. You don't really know how to work with all the things that you have given to you all at once. So of course there were difficult times, but all the doubts were basically challenges. And I guess I just learned along the way. I didn't really think, and I've never really thought about going or changing my work context, so to say, it's always been English for me. That was one of my passions. It's been one of my passions. And then being a teacher was something that I identified with. So it was always okay knowing that this is it and this is what I have to struggle to do my best and to achieve my best in.
I think that's really interesting what you said, where you recognize that it's not easy, and it's on some days it's a struggle, and you can only do your best, right? I mean, there are I know young people, newly qualified teachers or teachers in training who struggle or get into something that's really difficult, and then they start to have self-doubt, or they get angry at the system, and then decide, well, this really isn't for me. I mean, I suppose we have to distinguish between a system that's truly broken, and you've got people in the system who are working so hard, and there's no reward from it, and a system that's not perfect. And you've got many different characters working in the system, all towards a common goal. I've not, encountered anyone in various different education systems who've ever said to me, "Oh, my system, I'm really happy. My system's the best." We read it, right? We read it on the news, like, "Oh, the Scandinavian education system is, ideal," and things like that. But I think you've got to be in it to know really if that's something for you. And I think teaching is very much a personality thing. So you say that English is your thing, you found that. And what did you do? So, you got qualified. What levels did you teach in Romania, and what other kind of experiences did you gather?
So I was a public school teacher, and I started my teaching in a high school. In Romania, that would be secondary first and second. That would be years 14 to students 14 towards 19 years old, and I really did see myself always teaching older children, let's say, or younger adults, because it's so easy to communicate with them, and I really found a nice I was kind of in a really helpful and resourceful and meaningful context in terms of giving and receiving as a teacher. And then I took my exams, because we have public exams, like further exams after the definitive stage. And I basically learned towards and worked towards improving my skills as a teacher and getting all the qualifications that teachers have in Romania. It took around 10 years, I think, to reach the highest qualification for public teachers in Romania. Meanwhile, I also developed privately, and I worked for as a teacher for, or a trainer rather than teacher, for international exams. And
Okay.
yeah, it basically combined the public and the private sector, but in a way I really combined the different contexts of teaching, the one that is maybe a little bit more conservative and focused on achievement and success and the competitiveness that school in Romania really kind of concentrates on, combined with the freedom in a way to choose to open roads for my students and to allow them to develop their best skills and their to reach their best level possible.
Tell us what you mean with you mentioned this competitiveness that's in school in Romania. Tell us what you mean. What's the curriculum like? What would you teach, as an English teacher for that age group, and what's this with the competitiveness?
The system in Romania is really based on students acquiring knowledge and skills. Maybe not in English, we're always lucky, right? Because the students are supposed to be able to communicate and use the language. But generally speaking, the system is focused on acquiring information and basically achieving. And it's we have large classes of students. They all work towards the same final goal. We usually have, they are awarded prizes at the end of a school year. They are usually signed up in different, or they sign up because they know they have to, in different competitions and Olympiads and contests that enable them to prove their skills and prove their knowledge, and of course get a prize as a result if they're really good. So most students will want to be really good and they will strive to be the best, which is great in a way because they have a huge power of learning and achieving. We have really great students. We have
So it
really
kind
good
of,
schools.
yeah. So this prize at the end, sorry to interrupt, I just want to say it before I forget. So we could see, all that literature about motivation that we know about in language teaching. So that's kind of like an extrinsic motivator, isn't it? The push for them to do better with that tangible reward at the end.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. You basically have all the extrinsic motivation. You have the prize, right? You have the goal, and it's a combination that is great. Academic potential, external motivation. What else do you want? The students work really hard, but then it really leaves out those students and those voices and those minds that can do just as well and they can achieve, but they are not maybe into competitions or they don't really see themselves developing that way. So the
It
focus,
kind of excludes the introverts, right? Because I think you've got to be, as a kid, you've got to be really extroverted to, want to go out there and put, I mean, because you're putting yourself out there, right? There's always a chance that you may not be the winner, right? But it's the extroverts who would say, okay, I'll do it anyway. And if I win, hooray. And if I come in second place, well, that's okay. And
That's
if I
okay.
lose, that's okay. But it's the introverts. You're actually, it's not a system that's necessarily good or friendly to the introvert.
Yes, that is true. And you have to be able to, as a student, you have to be able to identify the context that works best for you. But it is true that it can be really demotivational, really. It doesn't really make you do your best, because if you know you're not going to get the prize, you're not going to even be in the top five, then you might as well not try at all.
Yeah, I mean, you're just gonna sit back and say, well, I'm not gonna do that, right?
I'm not
What
good
does the English
enough. I'm
language?
not good enough, or that's not for me.
Yeah, I'm not good enough, so why should I bother? That kind of defeatist
True.
attitude. That's a shame. What does the English? What kind of things did you do? As an English teacher, what does the curriculum look like? What
So
kind of
as
activities were the
yeah.
norm, in Romanian secondary schools for the
So
age group?
yeah. I hope my connection is still okay because I'm losing a little bit of signal. Is
Yeah, I
yeah.
can hear you.
So as
You
teacher of
break up now
English.
and again.
Oh, that's too bad.
It's
So
okay,
as a
keep going.
teacher, I'm gonna try to stay. As a teacher in Romania, you would have a very linear curriculum. We basically teach following the European framework of references for languages, and the high school system means that students will reach a level B2 at the end of high school. That's the norm. They are trained towards improving their reading skills, writing, listening, speaking, communication, And the school books we have are, I think, like the school books that exist everywhere around in the world, really. They are kind of patterned sort of on, we always teach the tenses at the beginning of the school year, then we go gradually towards conditionals. So we have a lot of grammar-based lessons. The language is explicitly taught to the students. And we also have, it depends, of course, on the school. We usually have classes with 2 hours of English per week, but we also have classes where English is taught intensively, and then they would have 4 or 5 hours per week. And then they do have conversation classes where they just speak and they do different activities that involve communication and creativity in the language. So I guess the system is really just based on acquiring as many skills as possible. And if you're lucky to be in an intensive class, then you have the chance to really put your skills into practice and to learn what you actually have to be able to. You learn the skill of speaking, which is not a given, really. It's not enough to learn the grammar. You have to be able to use the grammar.
Yeah, of course. You have to, put, string words together to make, sentences. And they've got to be accurate and things like, understandable, comprehensible, right?
Yes, exactly.
I have a question now. Before we go on to the next part of the show. And my question is, so you were saying that the curriculum follows, or is modeled against the can-do statements from the European, framework of reference for languages. And that's the same here in Germany. We have that in, in German schools as well.
Yes.
But my question is, so we have those goals, those can-do statements as goals in our curriculum, how successful or to what extent do high school leavers in Romania, in your experience, actually achieve those goals? Mm-hmm. When they come out, are they truly confident users, fluent users of English as a foreign language for them?
So it depends. I think it depends on the context the students are in and the school they go to. I would say in big cities, yes, that would be an achieved goal at the end of high school to have at least a level B1, I think, is most commonly reached. Level B2, we have schools where a lot of students reach level C1 and level C2. The school that I came from is one of those schools where students were really doing great and they were brilliant at English. But there are schools where the students are not led towards a higher level than, let's say, an A2. There are situations when students will not be able to reach a level, really. But this is also, I guess, it really comes down to the system of education because it's not as diverse and it doesn't map out according to the needs that the students have. It's either the good way or really, sadly, no way at all. So they either go to a good school and they work really hard towards achieving their goal, or they are likely not to be able to do much in terms of their educational objectives. They may not even know what those objectives are. So, yeah.
Right. So they're quite disadvantaged, really,
Yes.
Because, it all really depends on the school that they're in. Okay. So before we go on to our next segment, Dana, you're going to have to check your internet connection a little, and you talked about reading skills earlier, and we have some messages that teachers may find interesting.
Reading Solutions UK.
Are you looking for best practices and innovative strategies to foster confident, lifelong readers? Join the free online international reading conference on the 11th, 12th and 13th of June. Hear from speakers like TV personality and education expert Basit Siddiqui, beloved children's author Michael Rosen, fluency expert Tim Rosinski, EEF specialist Chloe Butlin, the National Literacy Trust's Irene Picton, and a range of experienced practitioners, including MAT leaders, deputy heads, heads of English, high-level teaching assistants, and school librarians. Through the three-day conference, speakers will explore a range of topics at the forefront of the current educational landscape, with sessions relevant for all educators and key stages. Visit Reading Solutions at readingsolutionsuk.co.uk for more information and to sign up for this free conference.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
The BBC reports on proposed changes to sex and relationship education guidance for schools in England. According to the report on the news website, government sources have told the BBC about the plans, which include banning sex education for under nines, as well as additional guidance for teaching about gender identity. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said the new guidance would ensure children were not exposed to disturbing content. Teachers have responded with concerns that some of the guidance appears contradictory and say there is no evidence of a widespread problem with current guidance. The new plans say secondary school pupils will learn about protected characteristics such as sexual orientation and gender reassignment, but makes it clear that schools should not teach about the concept of gender identity. It said it was right to take a cautious approach. Education Secretary Gillian Keegan, speaking on BBC Breakfast, said biological sex is the basis of relationship, sex and health education, not these contested views. ASCL's General Secretary said that it was important that banning the teaching of gender identity did not shut down discussion, and that young people must be able to discuss this without their teachers feeling in peril of saying something wrong. The new guidance also strengthens rules to make it easier for parents to access teaching materials to see what their children are learning, although many point out that this guidance is currently in place. Lucy Emerson of the Sex Education Forum said, "If topics were to be restricted, it would leave children even more dependent on getting answers from online sources." The draft guidance is now open to a 9-week consultation, but once finalised, will be statutory. An outline of the proposed new age restrictions can be found on the BBC News website and the consultation on the Department for Education website. In the United States, pro-Palestinian protests at colleges and universities have made the news again, as some graduates from Duke University in North Carolina staged a walkout. The protest came just prior to a speech by veteran comedian Jerry Seinfeld, who was due to receive an honorary degree. Mr. Seinfeld has been a vocal supporter of Israel since the 7th of October attacks by Hamas. Some students stayed to hear the speech, but videos posted on social media also showed some booing and chanting slogans in support of Palestine. Whilst the ceremony at Duke went ahead, plans at other universities, including Columbia and the University of Southern California, have cancelled or restructured their main graduation ceremonies to avoid further complications. The Daily Mirror features comments from Strictly judge Shirley Ballas about free school meals. She focuses on her own experiences of being raised by a single mother and says she understands what increasing numbers of British children living in poverty are going through. She recalls looking forward to her free school meal, referring to it as a nice lunch every day. At 63, Ms. Ballas is hoping to use her experiences to highlight the issue of poverty by being part of an ITV documentary called Kids in Poverty. According to the Mirror, 4.3 million children in Britain get their only meal a day at school. 30% of UK children are living below the poverty line, with a million clusters being in extreme poverty. Figures from the Joseph Rowntree Foundation say that the share of children living in absolute poverty has increased by 148% since 2017 and is at its highest level for 30 years. The documentary can be seen on demand, and full details of the article from The Mirror are on its website. Finally, students at Lancaster University have voted for all food served on campus to be plant-based, according to BBC Radio Lancashire. The Students' Union is supporting the gradual transition to 100% vegan menus, with a target of 50% by 2025 and 100% by 2027. A campaigner told the BBC that Lancaster University has a goal of net zero by 2035, and that implementing a plant-based catering system aligns with this goal. The Countryside Alliance said too few students had been involved in the decision, with 18 of the 19 delegates on the Students' Union Council, who do represent 13,000 students, voting to support the motion. But the Countryside Alliance called it an attack on freedom of choice and said the decision should have been put to a wider student vote. Universities including Stirling, Warwick and Newcastle have also voted to go plant-based, although Edinburgh rejected the plan. The votes have been organised following Animal Rising's Plant-Based Universities campaign. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
Okay, so we're back for those of you who've just joined us in the last couple of minutes. I have with me today Dana Metze, a secondary school teacher who's got qualified teacher status from Romania. Dana is a teacher of English. She'd been sharing with us her teacher training and her teacher journey in Romania. And now, actually, we're going to hear about Dana's journey in Germany. So at some point in the last couple of years, Dana moved to Germany and lots of things happened in between, and she's now a teacher at a secondary school. But how did that happen? Dana, tell us.
Yeah, to start, like we were talking just before the news, we were talking about the system, and it was actually a moment, like a sort of milestone that I, reflection moment that I had when I realized that the system didn't really make sense anymore in terms of future opportunities for all of our students. And then it literally hit home because I have two boys, they were 8 and 9 at the time, and I was thinking, what kind of life do I want them to have? And then, of course, it made sense to look a little bit further and to open new doors, the doors you mentioned at the beginning. And luckily I could as a teacher. I came to Germany. It was, I think, also the pandemic vibe at the moment, because I realized that it is actually possible to change the place that I work from and still do what I do. And I came to Germany with all the best of hopes and dreams, and tried to make it here as a teacher. And it, I have to say, hasn't been easy at all. I tried to find ways that I could continue working in the same systems or in the same manner that I had done back at home. And not being in a class really affected me, because I really just wanted to be with students, and I really just wanted to be in a school. And knowing that, I started to look for ways in which I could do that, and options that teachers coming from a different country have in Germany. And I was able to have my university qualification recognized. That was easy.
Tell us a little bit. So tell us a bit more. So just, you know, to fill in the gaps here for our listeners. So I know that when you came over first, you continued teaching online. Like, you know, like you mentioned, it was during the pandemic. So you could teach anybody anywhere. It didn't matter where you were. So that, you know, in a sense was, it was the silver lining, right? You moved to a foreign country. But then, you know, you wanted to get back into the classroom, and it was just not possible. You couldn't just go to a school and say, hello there, these are my qualifications. I'm a qualified teacher. Please take me. So you couldn't do that. So what did you actually have to produce, to do, to first get the qualifications recognized?
So what I first had to do was to go to, I think it's the Kultusminister. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but that's the place where you'd send your qualifications, and they acknowledge that you are, or you have what you say you have. Mm-hmm. And they give you a paper that attests that you can teach at this level, and you can have, you can work in these kind of schools. And I was attested to be a teacher for Sekundarstufe 1.
So lower secondary, yeah.
A lower secondary school. And I didn't really have any limitations in terms of schools. For people who are listening maybe from other countries and don't know the system, there are different types of schools in Germany, and you have Gymnasium, which is more towards the academic.
It's the grammar school. It would be similar to the British grammar school system.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's similar to the school that I come from, that I used to teach in Romania. And mm-hmm. then there is Realschule, and then there is Gesamtschule, sort of like general education, and Berufskolleg also. So I couldn't really see myself. I mean, I would gladly go to any, like take any road or sit on any branch. But what I did, and I got counselors. I got in touch with counselors, and they advised me to do this. I looked for substitute roles in the schools.
Okay. So hang on there for a second. So so in Germany we have the grammar school path, mm-hmm. where students are in secondary school from year 5 to year 12. Then we have the comprehensives, where they're in school from year 5 to year 10. Mm-hmm. And then we have they're also secondary schools, but they're not comprehensives. They're very much less academic, but mm-hmm. students would finish at year 10 with your general certificate of mm-hmm. education. And then what we also have in Germany are vocational schools that mm-hmm. students attend from year 10 onwards, I do believe. And so your qualifications were recognized, which allowed you then to take any job in any secondary school of your choice. Have I understood that correctly?
Yes. So at the level that my qualifications are recognized now, that's true. That's what I'm able to do. Mm-hmm. And there is another step that I have to take in order to be able to teach Sekundarstufe 2, so like upper secondary school.
Right.
And that would be, that is a longer process of recognition. And the reason that I'm still waiting for this to be finalized is that I have to sit a language exam, which has to be a minimum level C1.
So for German, not for English, German. Obviously.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So before we come to that, you know, second step of the accreditation, tell us about how you landed yourself a job. I know you did supply teaching. Where, mm-hmm. you know, where do you hear of these jobs? How do you get an interview?
Yeah, I applied to a lot of schools. There's a website that I used called Verena, and it's a website that teachers that are looking for substitute jobs in schools can go to, and they can filter the area that they would like to work in, the type of school they would like to work in, the roles they would like to have, and mm-hmm. then see what posts are available. And I was really lucky to, I did apply in a lot of places, but I was really lucky to have an opening in a gymnasium in a town close to where I live. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for 7 months, and it was really life-changing and mind-opening and the best experience in a long time, to be honest.
Okay.
It stretched me to the limits.
Right. Tell us how was it life-changing?
It was mind-blowing, to be honest, because at some point I didn't know who I was anymore.
And oh, no.
Sometimes, yes, it's true. Sometimes I feel that still, because now I have, I'm in a different school, but that's a different, like maybe later to approach. It was different from the very beginning, because what I realized was that I haven't been working as a teacher. I really haven't been working the same as my fellow teachers in Germany, and I really enjoyed seeing them come together as a team, you know, making things happen as a team, and teaming up together with students on the one hand and giving them the best of preparation possible, but the best in a way that I didn't really know. What happens is that in Germany, the students are brought up and taught to be autonomous. They are brought up, right, to be independent learners. They are brought up to be taking responsibility for their learning. And
okay,
that was something I didn't know how to incorporate in my lessons. If a student asked me a question, I would be like, yes, this is the answer. And mm-hmm, until I realized that's not the way to do it. You're not supposed to be giving students everything they ask for. They're supposed to be working towards that. So
right,
I, coming from a student that from a system that was based on competition and mm-hmm, achievement, academic achievement, I was placed in this system where everything was about can do, and everything was about really practical, the practical side of the language, knowing how to speak, knowing how to communicate in a team, knowing how to organize as a team, as a student, and not having everything told to you by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And it was indeed challenging.
Okay. I remember that one of the things that you had told me once was that it was such a culture shock for you,
yes,
to discover that German students didn't have the same drive, the same competitive drive that mm-hmm, students in Romania did. I remember mm-hmm, in the beginning of our friendship, that was such, whew, you know, it was such a culture shock for you. How do you feel about that now? And, you know, with your two sons also being,
yes,
in the German school system, how do you feel about that?
I've always felt that it's something I have to keep on learning. It was the culture shock, true, but that's something I expected. And I knew that I was coming to a country that had different values, and maybe the same values, but maybe kind of organized differently.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of teaching, it was a professional shock. And that's something I sometimes still feeling, because people here are just wired differently. They are wired differently, and that comes to the way they work in a school, the way they interact with each other as teachers, mm-hmm, professionally, the way they interact with the students as well. And it's something that I had pleasure, let's say, in observing. I felt really, I'm curious and I'm reflecting on it all the time. And it's something that I really enjoy seeing happening mm-hmm, around me. And I'm learning a lot from this to really be a better teacher myself in the new context that I'm in. And it's been quite a shock professionally. One
right,
thing that I learned, and I think the most valuable lesson for me, was professional detachment. And this means letting the students sometimes be frustrated, letting them learn on their own, allowing them the space to be autonomous and independent. So that
mm-hmm,
was just to give an example on the
yeah,
spot.
No, I mean, that's really, really interesting, Dana, because I think, you know, we grow up in one particular culture, we're influenced, we're molded by the values of that culture, we're influenced by how we were taught in the school system of that culture, and then
mm-hmm,
in your case, you went into the school system then as an educator, and your whole life has been, you know, basically mm-hmm. your teaching philosophy, your teaching skills, they've all been mapped that way, you know, and you're wired that way. And then you come here to a place where education and success in education and learning is perceived differently. And you could, right, one could say, oh my goodness, this is rubbish, and there's no way I'm going to fit in, and you could fight the system, or you could say, all right, well, okay, that's a bit of a culture shock, and oh my goodness, you know, this is something totally new to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, 2 years down the road and you're here, I think, I remember you had, was it two or three supply teaching positions? Were you in two or three schools, one after the other?
I think I tried to be in, I was actually in one school as a supply teacher, and then I found the school that I'm in at the moment. I did apply and almost got into two other schools, but as a teacher, as a substitute teacher, but it didn't eventually finalize. So it was also just very little time, to be honest. It mm-hmm. was just the two, a gymnasium experience of 7 months, and then this Realschule that I'm in at the moment, which is ongoing since August last year, basically.
Yeah, so it's your landing spot.
My landing spot, yes.
Would say. Do you think the experience at the previous schools as a supply teacher mm-hmm. helped you with how you're coping now, or do you think that that's just a stage in life and wouldn't have made a difference?
No, definitely helped me a lot, because it really opened this perspective onto a different way of learning, and as a result, a different way of teaching. And I think what I have really improved as skill in myself would be my organizational skills, because in Germany you have to be spotlessly organized, otherwise you can't make it. And then I learned, like, I think the 7 months that I had in the gymnasium were really the most relevant in my experience as a teacher, especially uh-huh. in the last 10 years, because I was able to learn how to cope with the system. It was kind of like trial and error and try again, and I was able to understand the system, and mm-hmm. I was able to work with and in it, so it really made sense to be there. And to I took a lot of lessons from my experience, and I laugh sometimes when I look back, because there were some things I never knew, and they were so obvious things, but I never really, you know, looked at them in a relevant way.
Okay. Yes. We're going to hear about your new experience, your new school shortly. We'll be back in a few seconds.
Reading Solutions UK. Are you looking for best practices and innovative strategies to foster confident, lifelong readers? Join the free online international reading conference on the 11th, 12th and 13th of June. Hear from speakers like TV personality and education expert Basit Siddiqui, beloved children's author Michael Rosen, fluency expert Tim Rosinski, EEF specialist Chloe Butlin, the National Literacy Trust's Irene Picton, and a range of experienced practitioners, including MAT leaders, deputy heads, heads of English, high-level teaching assistants, and school librarians. Through the three-day conference, speakers will explore a range of topics at the forefront of the current educational landscape, with sessions relevant for all educators and key stages. Visit Reading Solutions at readingsolutionsuk.co.uk for more information and to sign up for this free conference.
Okay, so
we're back
and we're going to hear, Dana, about where you are now. So you've got this, you're what ages do you teach? You teach just English. Tell us a little bit about that.
So yeah, I can say I've got it now. Like I'm in the place where I feel I belong and I found my context. Mm-hmm. I teach in a private school. It is a school that is part of a bigger organization. My students would be, interesting enough, from year 10, I think 10 years old, from 10-year-olds to 14-year-olds at the moment. And okay. I'm hoping to be able to teach older students in the future. So yeah, I teach Sekundarstufe 1, so that's lower secondary. I have great students that are really focused on developing skills and going the extra mile in terms of skills and improving themselves. Mm-hmm. And I really love the fact that the school that I work in is aligned with all the things that I've also looked for in my profession so far, and all the things that I've been trying to teach my students in all the schools that I've always worked in, that would be the becoming the person that you want to be, that you need to be tomorrow, becoming the person that you can that can succeed in mm-hmm. in the world we live in at the moment, and perhaps in the future as well.
So it's long-term success oriented, isn't it?
Exactly.
Being the best person you can be, and not success oriented in the short term to win a prize.
Yes.
You say that the school is one here in Germany of a bigger organization. I know that you've shared with me that it has schools all over the world, which means it's mm-hmm. quite international in nature. Does that make a difference to you and to how the school is run and what you do in class?
This is quite an interesting question, and I have to come back to the German system as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I would say that I think it makes a difference to everybody who is in the school, but at the same time, I don't really see it as a very different context of teaching learning as compared to other schools in Germany. Mm-hmm. It is, we have to follow the German law, and we have to organize according to the German law. That's a given.
So you follow the curriculum. You have to follow a national curriculum.
Exactly. So it doesn't really, we cannot decide necessarily on how the learning, I mean, the learning is organized the same, I think, in all of the, mm-hmm. in all of the schools, state or private schools.
Right.
Because the students have to sit exams, they have to prove their skills, they have to acquire the skills that they are requested at the end of the
so they need to meet the minimum curricular requirements. Right, so you couldn't say, so your school's not, it's private but not independent, not necessarily 100%.
Not separated from the
And you have
system.
Okay, and you follow the same holidays and things like that. Okay.
Yes.
And what is one thing for you, the one thing that differentiates this experience for you at this private school from your supply teaching in the previous state schools here in Germany?
This is a very interesting question.
I know, I'm full of interesting questions today.
Yes. The thing is that I was really excited to be teaching in the state school and to mm-hmm. be learning all of the things that I was exposed to discover really myself in the context. I feel that the school that I'm in at the moment really enables me to discover or rediscover myself mm-hmm. as a teacher and to kind of define my identity, professionally speaking. Since they are both quite new experiences, I couldn't really distinguish between the two. What really came across to me as relevant and interesting was the fact that the teaching is based and centered on the student and on acquiring high level skills and skills that make sense in the world we live in nowadays. I can compare it in a lot of ways with the school system in Romania, but yeah. Other than that, I think the two experiences have both been really useful in my mm-hmm. development, and I couldn't really distinguish the one from the other in terms of
different
I couldn't really interpret as the different school systems as more or less useful, because they've been both really useful.
Okay, I get it.
Yes.
I mean, they add to your learning experience, isn't it? They add to your journey as a teacher.
They both did, And I think,
Go ahead, Dana.
It really takes one to have the other, and it's been a continuous learning for me. And I think maybe the experience last year was really a road opener, and then now I'm able to walk healthy on my way, like really strong,
confidently,
with strong feet in my shoes, let's say, to go down the road and to know exactly what I'm doing, because I've experienced it and it makes sense.
Yeah. Has it also helped that you have sons? Did I ask this question already? I feel like I did.
No.
Okay. does it help that you have sons in the school system here to enable you to understand it as a teacher?
Yes, it definitely does, because I'm able to see the system from both perspectives, and it is very helpful. It's something like a plus that I think I'm lucky to have. Mm-hmm. I'm able to see the way the students are supposed to work, and then if there's something I've missed as a teacher, as a new teacher in this really sometimes overwhelming system, I can look back at what they are requested to do, and then I have a lot of aha moments, really.
All right.
Look at what they do. And they are, one of them is still in a primary school, and the other has started the gymnasium, so secondary school. And we basically have three different school systems in the house, so that's
right.
Really great. What more could I ask for?
You had mentioned briefly, and I did say I'd come back to it. So there's a second stage in this accreditation process. So you were sharing that the first stage where, you know, your qualifications were recognized, that gives you qualified teacher status and the license to teach, but only in secondary schools, which means in secondary schools up to year 10. And you say there's a second stage which gives you the second license. Can you tell us about that? Mm-hmm. And what's the holdup for you?
So the holdup for me is really the German language, because it's not the best. It's not easy to get the level C1, and it needs time. And I've chosen to concentrate, and I channeled all my energy into being what I'm needed in my job and doing the best that I can do in the in the class, because it's obviously a lot of learning and a lot of improvement that I feel that I have to go through. But then if I want to be recognized, like basically I am recognized, but what I would like to do is to have all of my state exams in Romania recognized in Germany, because it's something that teachers in Germany also have. They have two state exams, just like we do in Romania. So having them recognized would mean that I'm fully qualified as a teacher, in this system as well. And what I have to do is basically submit an application that is free of charge, and it's something that will, the application will then be studied, and there's a board of professors, teachers, counselors, right. I'm not really sure, that will meet, and they will decide if I meet all the requirements, if I still have to do something in order to get my recognition. Mm-hmm. And it might mean that I might have to retrain or train further so that I can get the recognition,
the full qualification.
Yeah, the full qualification. Or they might just say, and I hope that's the case for me, they might just say that I have all the things that I need to have in order to be recognized as a full teacher in the system in Germany.
And you still need the German C1.
But I still need the German C1. So that's something that I know, and I'm not sad about this. I know for sure that it's something I will not do at the moment, because I prefer to channel my energy towards other things at the moment. But
I mean, you've got to set priorities, haven't you? You've got to set priorities.
Yes.
And
yes.
I mean, I don't know if it's any consolation, but I've been stuck in my C1 course for the last 2 years. So I don't think I have got my C1. I've only got my B2. So if that's any consolation to
yes,
you.
I'm not alone.
Exactly. You're not alone. You're not alone. I do know, for those of you who are listening and wondering, you know, what's it like to get your qualifications recognized in Germany? One of the things, even as an English teacher, I've had this question asked before. Mm. Even as an English teacher, you still have to have evidence of C1 German. You still have to have evidence of C1 German. And even as an English teacher, people have said,
yes,
why would I need that, you know, as a teacher of English? So I have no answer to that. But
it is quite used in the school. German is quite used in the lessons, and I think especially in primary school up to maybe year 7 or 5, it depends on the school, they use German quite a lot in the lessons. And two things that I can say: one, the students always have to write this vocabulary test, and they have to learn the German word, and they have to learn the English word to do vocabulary tests.
Mm-hmm.
We do them quite regularly. That's one thing. And the other thing that I find at the beginning, I found a little bit discouraging, but I see the sense of it, is mediation. They are trained to understand messages in a language and be able to transfer them into another language, and it's either German to English or the other way around. So I guess it makes sense, obviously, to have a good level of German to be able to do that and to be able to teach this to the students.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know, and I mean, I've had teachers say to me, well, you know, B2, high B2 is enough. My argument is simply, you know, I think the reason for it really is if you get all these ministry documents, right, and you've got staff meetings,
yes,
you know, it may not be true, but there is the assumption that the higher the level of language, aka C1, you'll be able to follow such meetings and understand such documents better. And you know what? Guess what? We've gone on for an hour and we did not get to talk about those 21st century skills that we wanted to talk about.
Yes,
so I'm going to have to get you to come on the show on another day. Yes, definitely come over for tea with me. But for today, I think I can only say thank you, Dana, for your insights and your time. It's
thank you as well.
It's a bank holiday for you, and I'm looking out of my window. And for the listeners who don't know, Dana lives, I think, a mere 10 minutes away from me. It's sunny, so I think you can go for a walk.
Yes, we have a great day today, so lots of possibilities,
and you've still got that little wine festival outside your doorstep.
Yes, I know about that. My window.
Yes. So
thank you so much for your invitation and for having me on your show.
It's been lovely chatting with you, Dana. Thank you very much. And listeners, that's all we've got time for today. We've got many other shows this week. You can find them on ttradio.org and also listen back to the ones you've missed. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Dana, for your insights.
We'll get
you back to talk about 21st century skills. That's it for today.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.